Please help support the FitCast going forward, making sure that new episodes are coming to you every single week by going to patreon.com/thefitcast. That's patreon.com/thefitcast. And you can support the show starting at just $1 per episode. And everyone that is supporting the show through Patreon is also getting the episode 7 days early and without any pre-roll stuff like this that you're hearing right now. You can also go to thefitcast.com and click on the PayPal tab on the left-hand side and do the same thing. But again, going forward, these episodes are going to get done based on the support of the audience. So thank you so much to everyone out there that is supporting the show, and I hope you support it going forward. Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 314. I am Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have back on the show. It feels like forever since I was able to get this guy on Skype to talk to him, Tony Gentilcore. Tony, what's up?
Hello, Kevin. What's going on? Glad to be back.
Well, first off, to get a little personal, have to congratulate you on your engagement.
Oh, yes. Thank you. It's 5 years in the making.
You made it, man.
I made it. It was to say that I'm very happy is an understatement, and it's always weird because obviously, like, you know, I have an internet persona, and you know, I write and do the blog, and you know, I have random people that come to the facility now that I have no idea who they are. Like, oh, congratulations on your engagement, and I'm like, you know, thank you. And, but no, it's been, yeah. Lisa and I are both very happy, and I appreciate your kind words. Thank you very much.
Well, let's for people who do like the old versions of the show. There is some off-topic stuff at the end, but we're going to get right into the training discussion. And the first thing that I would like to talk to you about, and just because it has been really so long since we talked, and I'm always interested to see what you guys are doing at what is no longer Cressy Performance. It's Cressy Sports Performance.
Cressy Sports Performance, yes. Big change.
I'm going to make sure I don't get that incorrect. Because even when I still talk to people, like at seminars, I always say like CP, but now it's CSP. So
the same thing. They're both, people know, they're interchangeable at this point.
Well, first thing, I don't know if I talked to Eric a couple months ago on the show. I don't know if the Florida facility was locked in or if that was in the works at that point just yet, but I mean, right off the bat, you guys open up a second facility down in Florida, which I'm guessing is to mostly deal with, you know, obviously baseball players, and lots of baseball players don't like coming up north to train in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough sell to get guys that play a summer sport to spend their off season in Hudson, Massachusetts. Which the ones that do come is a testament to how dedicated they are. You know, they, you know, we definitely get a lot of great group of guys that come up in the off seasons to train here in Boston. But, yeah, Florida seemed like an obvious, progression to the facility. And, as of this week, it's officially open. Eric's been down there since early September. He's been training guys all along up until that point, until the new facility was actually made and done. But yeah, this week it's Jupiter, Florida. Cressy Sports Performance, Florida is now officially open. And yeah, training a lot of baseball players down there. But just like we do up here, you know, we train every sport and we get a lot of general fitness population clients too. So, you know, we're definitely happy to open up our doors to the people down in Florida.
So down in Florida, is that going to be just like specifically baseball, or are you guys going to be doing some general pop stuff there?
No, it's going to be, honestly, like the percentage of our clientele, like 90% of our clients are athletes. And then that breaks down to 90% of our athletes are baseball players up here. Down there, I think, yes, the bulk of the clients and people walking in those doors are going to be baseball players, especially because Jupiter is in close proximity of I believe, four affiliated Major League Baseball teams, which was kind of like a strategic placement for the facility. You know, but certainly because of the reputation that we have as a facility, as in general, as a good strength conditioning facility, as a group of like personal trainers and coaches, we're absolutely, I mean, we're not going to turn down business because someone doesn't throw a baseball. So I would assume that, yes, down in Florida, the bulk of it's going to be baseball players, but just like it is up here in Boston, we're going to be training a fair amount of, you know, regular Joes and regular James who just want to get after it as well.
That's awesome. And that's one of the things I want to hit on in this interview, because I mean, you have really been at the, you know, the front of the general pop stuff that has been going on at CSP, and you know, always being able to see like great pictures from your adult groups and things like that. You know, from your, you know, smartly done boot camps. You know, boot camp is, I guess, I don't know if that's kind of a negative term, but you know, you guys are definitely doing it the right way. So let's first talk about, you know, just programming in general, because you guys are always, you know, going out there just like you do at NBSC, and you're trying to see what the best are doing, and you want to see what the latest in research, whether it be in strength and conditioning or in rehab. And, you know, how do you take that information and implement it into your program? So I was just curious if you can kind of look back over the last 12 months or even like the last 18 months and think about what are the biggest modifications that you guys have made to the how you program at CSP, and even not just for athletes, but also for the general population.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things we've started to place more precedence on and within the last probably 6 months is just really placing a little bit more premium attention on movement training and sprint training, especially with our athletes coming in during the off season. But even with our general population clients, like, we want them moving well. Like, as much, I mean, much like you guys, as much as we want to get people stronger and bigger and faster, whatever, we also don't want them to have the movement quality of the Tin Man. So, you know, placing a premium on movement quality and sprint training and, you know, the proper progressions to get people to sprint correctly is something that we've started to implement a little bit more. And I'll give full credit to Coach Greg Robbins on this front. Like, he's the one that was served as the main impetus behind placing more movement training and sprint drills into our I guess I can say template. Like, we don't have like a set template that we have everyone do, because everyone has a different goal and assessment and, you know, injury histories and stuff like that. But certainly as far as like our athletes are concerned and some of our general population clients, just placing a little bit more importance and attention to detail on the sprint mechanics and like getting people to the point where they kind of pass the eyeball test. I mean, you know, like, if something looks bad, like, you can look at it, that doesn't look great. So, you know, just even if it's just a matter of implementing some simple skipping drills or footwork drills, and I don't mean agility ladders and stuff like that. Like, I don't really feel those have any place in any program. But as far as like just getting people to like coordinate their arm action and their leg action, trying to get them to put force into the ground, because I mean, sprinting is a pretty advanced protocol. Like, you can't just say, hey, let's just go sprint, because some people just aren't really prepared for that quite yet. Even with our pro guys, like, some of them don't move well at all. So it is important to have these, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 month progressions that are implemented into their programs to make sure that they're moving well.
So for people that are coming in that are new athletes or our clients, what's kind of the, I mean, it's always a hard question to ask because it's always going to depend, but what's like the ramp up for someone when you want to get them from, I'll give you an example to make it even better. So a lot of the audience is general pop. So let's just say you have the general population come in, office worker, you know, working 40 hours a week, and they're going to be sitting quite a bit. What's that general ramp up period to get them moving better, and what's the steps that you take?
Yeah, so with them, I mean, a lot of it's going to be dictated by the number of days per week they're going to be training. So let's just assume that someone's allotting 3 days a week of strength training, which I think is very doable for most people. So with that, I'll say, okay, I either want to add a movement day prior to one of your strength days that might be like a low level, like skipping drills. You know, and it, you know, I know you guys at Boyle, like, you tend to divide your, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have a linear day and a lateral day, correct?
That is absolutely correct. If we are doing a 4 day program, but sometimes we do a mixture of two for the younger groups.
So, but as far as like baseline ramping up, like, honestly, like, skipping, most people don't think about skipping or high knee marches or anything like that as far as like sprinting mechanics or ramping people up to that point. So, you know, it sounds mean to say it, but there's a lot of people who don't know how to skip, and it's kind of comical to watch them. You like, you say, hey, let's do some skipping. And it's like, it's just like a whirlwind of what the hell is going on here. So just breaking down skipping mechanics. I mean, that in and of itself is a fantastic drill that can serve as a ramping tool to get them to the point to where we are kind of working on that good arm action, and then incorporating that with the good leg action that we're looking for with sprinting. So it sounds very innocuous and mundane and boring, but that's what we found has been a good introductory drill or ramping up as far as getting people to the point. And it is kind of like a 3 month process. Like, you know, then we're starting people off. We're not doing anything more than like 10 to 20 yard sprints to begin with anyways. So it's not like we're starting people off on these long 30, 40, 60 yard sprints anyways. Like, we're going to build them up to that point. So, you know, especially with the more athletic minded people, you know, it's all about acceleration within those first 10 to 15 yards. So we're working on stuff like that. We're starting from the ground and working our way up. So we might even start them with, you know, they start in a push-up position, they explode up, and they're just working on that good forward lean and trying to get that hard shin angle that we're looking for. So just drills like that that are just going to kind of hammer everything home and get them to the point where when we do get them sprinting for longer distances, that it's going to look somewhat good and somewhat athletic. So and then get them to actually looking athletic.
Yeah, for some of the audience, if you're like listening to this and you're just a well-trained individual, you would be amazed if you tried to take someone off the street and try to teach them how to skip without going same arm, same leg, or just being able to literally, like, you know, we still have kids that come in today that aren't even, you know, old. These are athletes that come in that still can't get down just how to skip in place. Yeah. Let alone get him to do any kind of like lateral skipping and stuff like that. So, you know, I totally hear you when it's like you, it is kind of a slow process for some people.
Yeah. And that's why I mean, a lot of people are going to kind of roll their eyes and think, oh, come on, skipping, really? But I mean, that's what has to be
done. It's movement, man, right? Like, it's movement.
I mean, you think about like the act of skipping, when you think about it, does lead very well to the act of sprinting as far as the arm leg action. So, I mean, if someone can't skip properly, the likelihood that they're going to be able to do a good sprint is probably going to be pretty slim to none. So, you know, you know, it's not like we're doing it for a half hour. So these aren't drills that are going to be taking us a half hour to do. Like, it's like 10 minutes and then we go train. So, but yeah, that kind of gives people a little bit of flavor of how we're starting to incorporate, or just paying more attention to it, as far as like adding in more movement based stuff into the full week.
Well, once you got people warmed up and you got them, you know, going into the strength conditioning or strength training portion of the session, in terms of that, has there been any major changes to the way you guys will structure things?
Well, I mean, as you know, like, we're big proponents of the PRI mentality.
Yeah.
The Posture Restoration Institute. So breathing. So, you know, that's like the big it thing as of the last 2 years in strength and conditioning, is breathing and getting people to breathe better and how that parlays into better alignment and better performance. And, you know, we've been incorporating that stuff for a while now, but, you know, we don't go hog wild with it. Like, again, when we talk about PRI, it really, at the end of the day, PRI is all about getting people to relax. So we definitely like the idea of incorporating some of these breathing drills to at the start of a workout, just to kind of encourage alignment and encourage more neutral. I mean, we're never going to get there, but the more we can encourage it, the better. And then I love doing it also, especially with my general fitness clients, who are like, you know, you got all these CEO types and lawyers and people who are just on all the time. They're these type A individuals that have a hard time relaxing. So at the end of a training session, when they're all jazzed up, I will incorporate some of these breathing drills just to kind of stimulate that relaxation, parasympathetic nervous system, just to get them to learn to, okay, dude, let's chill out for a little bit. Let's relax And you know, obviously coming out of a workout, they're going to be pretty wired up anyway. So anything we can do to kind of get them to relax before they go home and to take these drills forward, you know, doing them on their off days, I think has been very advantageous.
So we got a couple questions from the audience. So I'm going to start sprinkling those in here. I guess this is coming from more of a, like a weekend warrior standpoint, but for someone that has been training for like 5 or more years, like this is someone that's definitely been, you know, getting the work in. Yep. Let's just say, because they didn't give me their age, let's just say they're in their late 20s, early 30s, like they're kind of middle of the road. How do you like to go about determining like total volume if someone's going to be training something like 3 days per week to make sure that you're just filling up that glass just enough without overflowing it?
Yeah. I mean, assume 5 years. I mean, it's safe to assume that if someone's been training for 5 years that they have a good foundation. But certainly, you know, I'm still going to be doing a full-on assessment with anyone that walks through. And then depending on if pain is present, depending on any past injuries that we have to be dealing with, and of course, depending on their goals, as far as like training volume, I mean, you know as well as I do, that there's no cut and dry answer to that. I mean, some people are big proponents of percentage-based training. Some people are proponents of auto-regulation. I'm kind of in the middle of the two. Like I've been sprinkling a little bit more percentage-based training off of people's one rep max into the mix. Like I feel like for people who have 5+ years of training, like they should know their numbers. They should know where their ballpark is as far as, you know, their best one rep max and 3 rep max numbers are. I mean, obviously we can test them too, but I'm starting to sprinkle a little bit more of the percentage-based training in just because I feel like, I know personally speaking in the past where I've gotten into trouble as far as like my body taking a beating is when, you know, I'm trying to build my deadlift up to a certain number and I'm just constantly doing 90% plus work all the time, week in and week out. And I honestly, like, that just eats me up. My spine hates me. My knees hate me. My shoulders will hate me, you know, but I was like, oh, I've always been told like I do 90% work to get my strength numbers up. And, you know, where I like the percentage based training for the more, the meatheads who have 5+ years is it kind of ramps things down, and kind of serves as a way to auto regulate your volume. Does that make any sense?
No, absolutely. And that's like one of the biggest things that people just don't like for the general people out there, you get a program online and that's the biggest thing, you know, the biggest hurdle that they run into is like dealing with the percentages.
Yeah. I think it can go both ways. Like I think percentage-based training is a good fit for a lot of people, mm-hmm. especially for the people who do have a good foundation of training and strength, you know, because again, they should know their numbers and, you know, you don't have to train at 90% all the time in order to get stronger. Like a lot of times it is about, you know, dropping it down to the 75% range or 80% range and just working on bar speed and technique. And, mm-hmm. you know, that you absolutely, I mean, and not to mention, I mean, some of the most popular programs and online in the past few years have been like Wendler's 531, mm-hmm. the Q method, and those are all percentage-based training. And people have gotten phenomenal results with that. But then too, like percentage-based training for some people, it could be hit or miss. Like, I mean, asking somebody to do, you know, 4 sets of 4 of 85% of the one rep max could kill them. Yeah. Like, I mean, it could be a total disaster or it could be too easy. I mean, it's hit or miss. But I do think percentage-based training for the more advanced trainee does have a lot of applicability just because I feel like it does offer a sense of like deloading and auto-regulation and it just doesn't beat the body up so much. So it kind of like puts on the brakes here and there, which I think a lot of us need from time to time.
Question on somewhat the same topic, and I apologize, I grabbed some of these off Facebook so I don't have your names, but at least the questions are getting asked. Hi, Kevin. What are Tony's thoughts on programming and partial range of motion for the big lifts? Are they of value, and how does he add them to the mix? Thinking for the deadlift and squat specifically, but let's not forget the bench, folks. Many thanks. Keep up the hard work.
Yeah, so partial range of motion stuff definitely has its place. For me, the big question would be like, okay, if someone's in pain, if there's a certain range of motion that causes pain, then certainly, and if I can do the same movement pattern that's pretty close and reduce the range of motion, but still work that movement pattern, I'm definitely going to use it. So, I mean, I know they didn't say bench press, but the bench press would be a perfect example of that. So someone's shoulder's bothering them, you know, obviously I'm going to ramp up certain progressions. So we'll start with push-up variations. We'll go floor presses. But certainly if we're adding in a bench press, I will start them with board presses, you know, just because it is going to be a pain-free range of motion for them, and which we're still working the bench press. We're kind of getting the advantages of the bench press, but we're not causing pain, which is going to be important. But if we're taking pain out of the equation and we're just talking about pure partial range of motions just to build strength, yeah, there's some applicability to that. But to me, one of the big paradigm shifts that I've had recently with any supplemental movements that I'm adding in. So talking under the assumption that we're talking squat, deadlift, bench press, you know, the big three, any of my supplemental lifts that I put in after those big lifts, so, you know, my main movement in one day might be the deadlift, my other day might be the squat, my other day might be the bench press, all my supplemental lifts that follow those are going to address some kind of weakness and technique of those main lifts. So, you know, for the squat, for example, if someone is having a hard time out of the hole, like we're going to do pause deadlifts. That's going to be an excellent supplemental movement that's addressing a weakness in the main movement itself. Something like a deadlift, if somebody has a hard time with speed off the floor, you know, I know people are kind of gravitate towards like deficit deadlifts. You know, we're going to do a deficit deadlift because that's going to increase the range of motion or, you know, what have you. But to me, like the advantage of it is like with a deficit deadlift, we have to dip a little bit lower, get our quads involved a little bit more, and that's addressing a technique or weakness with the deadlift. So if I'm going to be including partial range of motion lifts, you know, it's got to be in the context of like, is that addressing some form of technique flaw or is it addressing some form of weakness with the main lift itself? So that will be how I would differentiate whether or not I'm going to be adding that stuff in.
So not just like seeing a video on YouTube of someone doing a 3-board bench press and being like, hey, yeah, that's what I'm going to do for the next month.
It's not about accumulating volume and making stuff harder just for the sake of accumulating volume and making stuff harder. You know, it should be, I mean, if strength is someone's goal and improving their numbers on those big three is their goal, then we got to make sure that the movements and the supplemental movements that we put in that program are addressing weaknesses and technique flaws with those movements. So it isn't just about making stuff harder and making it like so it hurts, you know. So I'm not against partial range of motion stuff. Like I do feel, assuming that people's technique is on point, but we just have to be careful of how we're applying that kind of stuff and what's the rationale for applying that stuff into the program in the first place.
You know, another thing that we get a lot of questions on is, you know, variable or resistance stuff, whether you be loading with bands or with chains or whatnot. So are you guys still implementing any of those kind of tools to you know, help people get past any kind of, you know, sticking points in terms of their maxes?
Oh, yeah, we absolutely. I mean, with the deadlift, I love block pulls versus chains. Like, I love doing stuff like that just because, I mean, I love block pulls more so than rack pulls. You know, with rack pulls, you can't really bend the bar at all. But with block pulls, you can. And, you know, we certainly include stuff like chains and bands and stuff like that, but we're certainly not using that kind of stuff with a newbie.
Exactly.
You know, that I just don't feel like they're strong enough to be using that stuff in the first place. Like barbells and dumbbells have worked for a lot of people for many, 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 many years. So people have gotten really strong without that stuff before it became popular. But I'm also not, you know, super strict strength coach all the time. Like I understand there's times where you just want to do stuff because it is fun and yeah, it does look cool and you know, yeah. And then sometimes too, if someone's goal isn't necessarily strength, they want to do, more of a hypertrophy program or more, they have more of like an aesthetic bias. Then yeah, I mean, I'm not opposed to adding in stuff like that just to, you know, accumulate volume and make stuff more challenging. But, you know, if strength is the goal, like, chains and bands do have their place, but you kind of have to earn the right to get to that point, in my opinion.
All right, so I want to change directions a little bit and focus a little bit more on the female side of training, because as I mentioned previously, you've done a really great job, implementing a program that's more, I guess, directed towards, females, with what you've been doing, especially in the mornings there at CSP. So I was wondering if you could just talk about, what you've really learned, from starting to, train more and more women over these last couple of years, in terms of, what you other people out there should be doing for programming for women, or what women should be doing out there in terms of exercise selection.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to women, like, I actually really like working with women, just because they're really easy to train. I don't know what your experience is, Kevin. I'm sure it's pretty similar to mine. It's like, there's no ego involved with training women, or very rarely. So if I tell them to take weight off the bar, they're not going to get all huffy and puffy with me. Like, oh. Like, they don't care. I mean, some obvious. I mean, that's not to say that some don't care about getting stronger. They're just not going to give me a lot of attitude if I tell them to take some weight off the bar and work on technique. So in that regard, I love working with women. I also love working with women because I love deprogramming them into thinking that lifting heavy weights is going to make them, that big and bulky mantra that a lot of women are programmed to think is going to happen through all the various magazines and TV shows. So, and I just love working with women too, because like when they start getting it and they start buying into the strength thing and they start buying into, focusing more on performance-based goals. So when I start with somebody from the get-go, like, I'm always adamant on listening to their story, listening to what they have to say, listening on what their goals are. But I want to start to get them to focus on some kind of goal or performance-based goal. So whether that be finally being able to do a strict chin-up, being able to do 10 strict push-ups, being able to squat one times body weight for a couple reps. I mean, I don't care. But if I get him in the mindset, like, we're going to work towards that goal, then everything else just kind of falls into place as far as, like, what the number says on the scale, how their clothes fit, because they're just focusing on getting better at that goal. They're focusing on getting stronger. And when they see that they're lifting more weight now than they did 2 months prior, when they start seeing that, hey, I can do a chin-up now, or I can do all these push-ups that I couldn't do before, it's like that switch turns on, and they get addicted, and I love that. I love when I get them to, like, buy into this whole strength training thing. And to give them credit too, I think CrossFit has done a very good job at opening up the doors to women as far as, like, barbells and dumbbells. Like, nothing in the past 10 years have made exercise more cool than CrossFit. And I mean, and I've stepped into a few CrossFit affiliates. Like, I go to a few to train. I don't do CrossFit classes. I might just go to their open gym and do my own thing. But it's pretty profound to see how many women are. It's like a 1-to-1 ratio as far as, like, women to men at these affiliates. And that's awesome. I mean, that's not to say that I agree with a lot of the programming and stuff that they're doing, but it's hard to knock people getting after it and throwing barbells all over the place. So, but yeah, as far as, like, training women in general, like, I don't really go out of my way to treat them much differently than the guys. I think that's why a lot of women prefer going to places like, Cressy Sports Performance and Boyles, is that they don't get treated differently than the guys. It's not like we're treating them like these delicate flowers. Like, oh, okay, you're going to go over here to the girl weights and do the girl stuff over here in the girl section. That's not what we're about. So, and I think they appreciate that. So, but yeah, they're deadlifting, they're squatting, they're pushing the prowler, they're throwing med balls, they're doing kettlebell swings. They're doing everything that the guys are doing, but, they're getting coached how to do them correctly. So I don't think there's any, like, super secret formula that I've implemented with training women. I mean, I think psychologically, like, I have a good handle on it in the weight room. Outside of the weight room, I have no idea what women are all about. They're crazy. But I also think because of Lisa, like, who is a psychologist, like, I mean, she kind of helps me kind of get into deeper into the thought process too. So, but
she's
really,
also a woman.
She is. She's also a woman. Thank God. So, but it, at the end of the day, it's just about empowering. You know, encouraging and empowering women that, you know, strength training is a great thing, and it leads to a healthy body, a healthy mind, and you know, that's kind of my approach to it.
Very cool. So let's hit on another training topic that we got a couple of people asking about. You know, just in terms of like, what do you do when you get, whether it's like a distance coaching client or you have someone that comes in and is just like, Tony, man, like the program, it's good, but I'm just bored. Like what do you, like, is there anything else that we can do to change things up? So is there anything that you do in terms of just like mixing up programs and just helping people get out of a rut when they get bored with the programming?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I tell them to F off.
Of course.
No, I'm just kidding. You know, if, I mean, I get it. I mean, sometimes I don't have that much of an ego. Like, for example, at our facility, we have 6 full-time coaches. So if I've been running the program for somebody for 3 years, I mean, sometimes as a coach, and you probably get this too, Kevin, like you get to the point where you've been working with somebody for so long, you're like, what the hell am I going to do with this person now? Hmm. Like we've done seemingly everything. Like what the heck am I going to do with them? So even as coaches, we sometimes get bored writing the programs for certain people. So I'm not opposed to like, hey, how about we have another coach take over your programming for a couple months just to kind of get a different pair of eyes, spice it up a little bit. I think that would be an easy way to switch it up and kind of bring a little life into someone's programs. But sometimes too, if that's not an option for people, is going back to the conversation we had a couple minutes ago, it just might be a matter of finding, okay, let's find a new training goal to train for. I think that's a big mistake that a lot of trainers and trainees make, is like they're just writing programs without really a main focus or goal. So, you know, if we're always writing a program under the guise of like, okay, we're shooting for X goal or X number or whatever, that's going to be kind of like the guide for writing an effective program and hopefully a program that's going to be keeping people engaged. Mm-hmm. But certainly, I mean, there's a little give and take. Like as a strength coach and as someone who's hired to write the programs and take over someone's programming, I mean, they're trusting in me that I know what I'm doing and that I'm writing effective programs based off their assessment and their goals. And that's what I am always going to do. But at the same time too, like if they're paying me to provide a service, like there's a little bit of give and take. Like I'm not like if I have to throw in like a quick, you know, it's Friday night and they're going out later on. If I have to throw in like a quick, you know, arm finisher, like fine, let's do it. You know, there's definitely a little bit of give and take. So, I mean, it kind of goes both ways between the coach being able to be a little lenient and the client.
Yeah, let's continue to stick on some programming stuff because we got like kind of a lot of questions about that. In the meantime, this is where I'm going to give a second to give a shout out to everyone that is supporting the FitCast through Patreon at patreon.com/thefitcast. You guys made sure that this episode got produced this week. Even with me being all jet lagged and stuff, I made sure an episode gets out. So thanks for Tony, because I know he just hasn't slept since Interstellar's last trailer came out.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about nutrition. I'm going to butcher these names, man. I think I'm just going to say Jonas, so I don't mess it up, but, got two questions for Tony. First, how does he implement nutrition coaching with his general pop clients? So let's start with that one.
Yep. I mean, I'm lucky in the fact that at CSP, we have Chris Howard, who's our resident nutritionist. So I can defer to him as far as most of the nutrition consults that take place there. But a lot of times too, like I'm just trying to get, because, you know, today it's like, with the internet, I mean, intermittent fasting was in 2 years ago. Now, you know, paleo's always been in. You know, I don't know what Kevin, do you know what the latest craze is right now as far as nutrition?
No, I kind of stay out of that crap these days.
Bulletproof coffee.
Oh, of course, yeah.
There's that. I mean, so there's all these like things that are in. Like intermittent fasting was all the rage like 2 years ago. You know, I had so many people walk up to me like, hey, I've read about this intermittent fasting. And
well, remember before that, it was like the warrior diet. It was like one meal a day.
Yeah, which is kind of the same concept.
Yeah.
You're just kind of saving all your calories for later on in the day. And then, of course, paleo is very popular amongst the CrossFit crowd and amongst the general fitness population crowd too. And really, for me, what it comes down to is like, I'm going to keep it simple. Like, I'll just start discussing, okay, what did you have for breakfast? Like, what are your food choices? Like, really, that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. It's just making sure that people are making quality food choices. And if they're not making quality food choices, what are the barriers that are preventing them from doing so? I mean, it sounds really dumb for me to say it and really obvious to say it, but sometimes the reason why people don't eat a certain types of food is they don't have the pots and pans and utensils to do it, you know? So if that's a barrier from them preventing from going to McDonald's rather than cooking a meal at home, then it might just be a matter of like teaching them like, hey, you need to go get some pots and pans and you need to, you know, maybe we got to show you some standard cooking, cooking expertise or drills that we can do in the kitchen. So pointing them to there's various YouTube videos I can point people to. I know Precision Nutrition has a lot of YouTube videos and articles on their site that discuss this point. I mean, another thing to consider too is like people on their ride home from work, like they drive past McDonald's and Burger King and Pizza Hut and all these fast food places. And so if I want to make somebody a better choice, it's like, hey, how about we go to Chipotle where you can at least buy a meat bowl or make some kind of salad with some delicious meat on there. So a lot of it with me when I'm working with general fitness population clients isn't so much like showing them like the new holy grail approach to, you know, getting ripped, because there really is no such thing. But it's just about, okay, how are we going to make better food choices to begin with, you know, and be consistent with that? Because consistency is always going to be the main driving force here. If they're not being consistent with whatever they're doing, then it's not going to work. But from there, what are some of the barriers that we need to overcome in order to get them to be consistent with those, with making those healthier food choices? So, I mean, and that could be that's a whole nother like 2 hour long conversation right there. So that to me, when I start the conversation with a general fitness client, that's the conversation I'm having. It's just get them into that mindset, get them in the mindset that no, there is no magic pill. There is no one secret diet. There is no one holy grail approach that's going to get you to where you want to be. Like, we need to start making food choices that fit your lifestyle, that you are going to be consistent with, that are going to work for you. And that's kind of like my beginning starting point with any nutrition talk I have with anyone.
Yeah. Like, I just love how you went to Chipotle to get some delicious meat.
It's awesome. It's so good. So good.
It's funny. I spent like 20 days in Japan, and literally on the way home from the airport, that's where I stopped to get food.
Like, I was in DC a couple weekends ago, and I was in Dulles, and they had a Chipotle there, which is the first time I've seen a Chipotle
in the airport.
And I was like, oh my God, this is the best airport ever. It was like, so yeah, I crushed it too. But that made sense though, as far as what I said, as far as like, you know, just steering people in certain directions to help them make better choices.
We're just posers, man. Ben Bruno is the king of Chipotle. Like, that guy is, if you ever go out to eat with him to Chipotle, you will be amazed at how much he can get on that salad bowl.
Well, I'll tell you what, too. Ben and I have gone to many JP Licks back in the day, and we that man could crush some Sundays, too.
Yeah, dude, Ben's a beast. So let's continue going on. We got a couple more questions left before we wrap up. But the first thing that I wanted to make sure that we did hit on was a blog post that you put up a couple weeks ago or a couple days ago now. But and this is a topic that comes up a lot. It's a lot of people out there in the industry who aren't doing online coaching or distance coaching who say people shouldn't be doing it because they're just sitting in their underwear all day and they're not even training people and all this crap. So You actually put together a blog post titled, "Do You Need to Train People in Person in Order to Write About Training People?" So what were your thoughts? What's your takes on that?
I think, yes, they do. You know, I that's not to say there aren't a lot of people out there who are, I mean, I put it out on Twitter, actually. That's how I started the conversation. I basically said, hey, I'm curious, like, what are people's thoughts on people who write about training and training people yet don't train anyone in person? And I got a lot of good, interesting feedback. Brian Crane, Joe Dowdell, you know, all these buddies of mine that kind of responded, as well as several other people. But, you know, there's a difference between somebody who reports fitness and health and actually writes about it in the context of, like, okay, I'm writing training programs, I'm discussing how I go about training people. Like, so that's not to say there aren't people out there who are fitness reporters and fitness writers who don't train people, who don't give a lot of good information, because they absolutely do, but they also don't pretend to be something they're not. Like, they're reaching out to people like you, they're reaching out to people like myself, and they're reaching out to others who they are, in quote unquote, in the trenches, and they are training people, and then they're asking us for our advice and our expertise, and then they write a whatever article they're writing. So they're not pretending to be something they're not. What I don't agree with, and what I feel happens a lot, are the people who, I mean, the internet's a wonderful thing. It gives us all this information, and, you know, it allows us to communicate and learn, but it also gives people free rein to build false expertise because they have a YouTube page. And they put up really crappy YouTube videos. So, you know, that, and these are the people that build a following and build a niche, but they don't train anyone in person. I mean, there's people who write for pretty reputable websites that don't train people in person. And, you know, that's their decision. I mean, more power to them that they're able to make a living that way. But to me, there's a little sense of integrity that I like to maintain, as far as, like, it's always going to be important for me that if I'm writing about fitness and I'm writing about training people and I'm writing about how to write effective programs and how to do assessments, and that I'm always going to be training people in person. Like, you know, I still train. I'm at the facility 30 hours a week coaching. Like, you know, you are too. Like, as much as you do this podcast and you're out there and you're writing and doing other stuff, like, you are coaching people in person. You know, I feel like it gives us a little bit of a sense of street cred, I guess, is the best way I can put it.
Oh, man, I just do it because it's the most fun part about my job these days.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, yeah, absolutely. That's not to say it's not fun. I mean, yeah. But I'm saying, like, you know, as someone who does do fitness writing, like, I do a lot of writing, I feel like because I train people in person, because I am doing, I'm what I write about, I'm doing with my people, my athletes and my clients. Like, that's where I'm getting my ideas and formulating my thought process. And, you know, I feel like that gives me a little bit more credibility compared to somebody who is just sitting at home on their computer, not wearing pants, and, you know, writing whatever the hell they want to write about, and they're not training anyone. I mean, and of course, that's just my personal opinion. I'm not saying I'm right.
Well, if you think about it, just in the terms of the context of programming, you need to be able to, like, that's why when I came and I interned at CrossFit Performance at the time, but CSP, like, the first thing that I really had to get good at is being able to recognize, you know, movement pattern issues and this, you know, the really common situations and how to address them to make sure that you can get people doing what you need them to be doing correctly.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what you don't get if you're just not ever seeing people do things incorrectly.
That's a perfect bullet point comment right there. I mean, that's kind of like, that was kind of like the main point of why I wrote that article, is like, how is it feasible that you, if you're not training people in person, you know, that you're writing about training people. And I mean, if you're not practicing what you're preaching, then it's hard. There's just a credibility issue. And believe me, like I said earlier, there's plenty of people who are writing programs and write about training people that aren't that get great results for their clients, and they're not hurting clients. And you know, but again, the ones that are doing that and doing that well also aren't pretending to be something they're not. Like, they give credit where it's due. They reach out to people like you and myself and others out there. You know, it's just, you know, it's an interesting conversation as a whole. Like, I didn't get a lot of pushback from the article that I wrote. Like, I felt like I got a good response and good feedback, and for the most part, everyone was agreeing with me. Mm-hmm. And I felt I was pretty fair with what I wrote. Like, I wasn't trying to bash people who don't train people in person yet do write about training, because, like I said, there are plenty of people out there that do it and do it well.
Well, let's wrap things up. And again, like I mentioned before, you know, this episode has been made possible by people that have been supporting the show through Patreon and through PayPal. If you want to be a supporter of the show, you can go to patreon.com/thefitcast, and starting at just $1 per episode, you can help make sure that these shows get produced, and you are supporting the creation of this educational content that shows up on your listening device every single week. So thank you so much to everyone out there. You guys are what makes this show possible. But for everyone out there, Tony, I know you've been doing tons of speaking engagements, so I was wondering if you had anything coming up that people should keep an eye out for.
Yeah, Dean Somerset and I are going to be out in Los Angeles at the end of this month, out in CrossFit 714 in Orange, California. So we're going to be out there. It'll be my first trip ever to California. I've never been to California, so I'm looking forward to it. And then next year, I'm looking to have I'm setting up a solo gig in Australia. So if there are any Australia listeners listening, I'll be in on the East Coast, Australia, Sydney and Ballina in early March 2015. So look out for that. But yeah, I mean, I've been doing more speaking engagements, which is kind of cool. I was in D.C. a couple weekends ago. Dean and I were in D.C. as well, doing another speaking engagement. We're going to be in L.A. So, but the next two are going to be L.A. and then in Australia in March. So anyone listening in those areas, it would be great to come out and talk shop and visit. And if you're interested, just go onto my website. There'll be more information there.
Yeah, make sure you're checking out TonyGentleCore.com. And also you can follow him on Twitter at TonyGentleCore1. And for the FitCast, you can follow the FitCast on Twitter at FitCast with no the. And of course, please make sure that you are subscribing through iTunes. If you enjoy the show, I'd love if you throw a review up there. And I think for next episode, we're going to be having Jill Coleman back. But I got a lot of great stuff in in motion to make sure that these episodes are coming to you every single week. So again, I can never say thank you enough to everyone out there that is supporting the show to make sure that it continues to get done. So, Tony, man, it was great to talk to you and to catch up. And we got to make sure that it's not too long till we do another one of these again.
Absolutely, Kevin. Always enjoyable to come on. Hope to do it again soon.
All right, we're here for the off-topic discussion, and believe it or not, you've already listened to the show, so you know Tony Gentilcore is here. And I know, Tony, you must have a very huge level of an excitement because Interstellar comes out this weekend, right?
Yeah, I have a movie boner. Yeah, it's I've already got my tickets. I think I told Lisa, we were sitting at the table over the weekend doing work, and you know, I was like, so you want to go to Reading or do you want to go to Natick? Because we're going to go see
IMAX, of course.
So, because like an hour, like Nolan filmed an hour of the movie with an IMAX camera. So the IMAX experience is going to be phenomenal. So, and I'll go watch anything Nolan does. Nolan can film a video of him making a coffee. I would probably pay to watch it. So, yeah, I'm very, very excited for this weekend. You know, and then not to mention, this is just the time of year that all the good movies are coming out. So, you know, we got The Hobbit coming out in December, the third installment of that. That's going to be phenomenal. But even so, like, I've also saw two really good smaller movies recently. One was called Whiplash, which I actually wrote my very first movie review on my blog when I went and saw this one. Fantastic movie, just about this kid who's like a percussionist who's accepted into this like really elite school, and his teacher is a bastard. And you probably know the guy. Do you know J.K. Simmons?
Of course, yeah. It was the guy from, he was in Spider-Man. He's been in a bunch of stuff.
He's like one of those guys that's in a lot of movies that like people are like, oh, that guy, you know. And he was Juno's dad in the movie Juno.
That's great.
Yeah, so he is like, he was phenomenal in this movie. Like, he plays a jerk like no other jerk, and you know, it's just a fantastic movie. And then I also saw Birdman the other day with Michael Keaton. And that was a really good movie too. And but yeah, no, certainly I'm definitely jazzed up for Interstellar coming up this weekend.
Have you seen the trailer for Furious 7?
No, but I just saw it went up. So what, you tell me, like, how jazzed up are you for that one?
It's the movie of the year for 2015.
Of course it is. I mean, come on, Avengers? No, who wants to see that?
No, Avengers is going to be the same old crap. It's going to be, you know, Iron Man is going to, you know, get his butt kicked by the Hulk for a little bit. I saw in that trailer, but, you know, I think it's going to be Furious 7, that is going to be the cinematic experience of the year.
I'm curious. I mean, I'm going to watch the trailer, but do they have any scenes of Paul Walker in there?
Yeah, he finished all of his like principal photography. Like, okay, all that stuff was done before he died. The only stuff they had to do some reshoots with like his brothers to do some extra scenes that they need. You know, there's always, like with movies, you always have to go back and like reshoot stuff based on like the audio or like the picture didn't come out good. So. That's all they had to do. So the movie was basically done, and you know, it's just, I don't even know how they're gonna pull this off without it being like 2.5 hours long. Like the last Fast 6 was like 2 hours and 20 minutes. Like it was,
yeah, that was long. Yeah, I remember that. That was a long one.
But
and when does this come out? Does this come out next summer?
It comes out, I think it's April like 4th.
Gotcha. So you probably already got your tickets for that, right?
I wish. I can't pre-order them just yet. But the if people know me, and well, if people have been listening to the show for a long time or they listen to these off-topic things, you know, there's two things I will always watch, and that's a Fast and Furious movie, and it's a movie with Jason Statham, and they brought him into Fast and the Furious. So,
well, that's right, because that final scene, the last one, that's right.
I know. We don't talk, just in case people haven't, if you haven't seen Fast 6, you're a horrible person. You're a bet. Like, I honestly judge the character of people based on their opinion of those movies.
Yeah.
No, like you can seriously tell if someone is just no fun. If they don't like Fast and Furious movies, yeah, they're just, I mean, not a good person.
Those are definitely, I mean, obviously we both know that those are the type of movies that are going to win any awards. I mean, but that's not the point of them either. So
it's to have fun. It's to do like crazy over the top scenes, and it's to see like The Rock, you know, way too big and juiced up and stuff. So,
yeah, so that was a slight spoiler, but we certainly didn't give anything away with mentioning Statham.
Maybe that's I mean, to be honest, like that's kind of it for my movie talk. I got to see Guardians of the Galaxy on the way home on my flight back from Japan.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that I would say Guardians of the Galaxy is definitely in my top 10 of the year. I wouldn't say, like, I mean, it was fantastic. Like, I mean, Marvel can do no wrong at this point. I still say my favorite Marvel movie is probably Captain America 2.
Okay.
I really, for some reason, I just really enjoy, I mean, out of all the Marvel movies, all the Iron Mans, Avengers, Thor, I felt Captain America 2 was pretty legit. And Guardians of the Galaxy is probably right up there too. It's going to be pretty fun to see like how the Marvel universe kind of butts heads and joins forces, because all of them at some point, X-Men, Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, like they're all going to intertwine at some point. So it's going to be kind of cool to see that happen.
Yeah, it's a real, like, I don't even know. I saw that thing that they just like announced like the next 8 movies. Like, I don't know.
It's like they have like their slate through like 2025.
Yeah, it's gross.
The actors, I mean, yeah, we can't, they have no room to complain. They're getting paid millions of dollars to play these roles. But I know there's a lot of actors that are turning down these roles because they're forced to lock themselves into like 3, 4, or 5 movie deals for to play one character. And a lot of them don't want to do that. And I mean, I guess I can't blame them there. I mean, but certainly, oh, woe is me. I'm getting paid $10 million to play a character for 5 movies. That's not a bad paycheck.
No, they seem to all be doing all right. Robert Downey Jr. was like the highest paid actor in like the last 3 years. So
yeah, not bad.
No, not bad. All right, cool. Well, hopefully this whets people's appetite for some off-topic stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
What's that?
I was telling people to go see Interstellar. It's going to be awesome.
I heard mixed reviews.
Yeah, well, you get people who they're expecting Batman, and Nolan makes cerebral movies. So, like, some of the reviews that I've read about Interstellar is that, oh, it's long, and the movie and the plot gets drawn out, and it makes you think. But that's what Nolan does. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, his first major film was Memento, which is amazing. Then he did Insomnia, which is amazing. And then you factor in all the Batman movies, which are pretty deep cerebral movies. Like they aren't just like wham bam explosions. Like there is some plot and thought to it. And then not to mention Inception. So
yeah, Inception might be my favorite of all of his movies.
Yeah, I mean, he makes movies that make you think. Like it isn't just some stupid plot where you just sit there and you don't have to think about anything. So those are the reviews that I've read. That is just like, oh, it's too long and it's drawn out and the stories, you know, but hell, they're traveling in space. Like, what the hell? It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm just hoping for an Event Horizon turn at some point.
Yeah, right.
And have Sam Neill's skin turn inside out. So
yeah, that'd be sick.
That would be awesome. All right, so we're going to record the main show now.